This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
I'm Andrew Weinstein. I'm going to be your guest moderator for this session. We're very fortunate to have two presenters. First up will be Paul Banks, Director of Developmental English at McGraw-Hill Higher Education. Our second presenter will be Kent Freeman, Chief Operating Officer of Vital Source Technologies and Ingram Content Company. Paul will lead off and present his experiences around accessibility and his technology. We'll take questions for Paul about 5 minutes, and then we'll have Kent Freeman present, and we'll reserve time at the end of Kent's presentation for questions as well. And so with that, Paul.
Hi. In my session, what I want to do is actually step back for a second and talk about accessibility in much broader terms. The question is there a technology that we can develop that will actually encourage or allow all readers, all sighted readers, to comprehend material and retain material better simply because a technology will allow the brain and the eyes to be optimized to absorb information? The problem in U.S. education today is that at the 18-year-olds today essentially have this following breakdown in terms of their achievement in education. 1 in 5 will not even receive a high school diploma. And of the 80% that do get a high school diploma, 2/3 of those will seek a college degree, but only half of them are actually going to be able to get their college degree. So the question is, why is this the case? And there are many factors involved, but the bottom line is that in the top world economies, that is the G20, the United States ranks below average in the high school graduation rates. They just rank average in terms of the number of students who actually go to college, and they rank, unfortunately, we rank at the very bottom, almost number 18 in terms of college completion, or the number of people that actually graduate from college. And according to a recent study by the Harvard School of Education in Pathways to Prosperity, we find that there are a number of factors involved, but the number one thing is that students aren't ready for the rigors of academic work. So the question is there something that we can do with technology that will make access to education and to reading more available to a greater number of students? And so McGraw-Hill Connect has incorporated a technology called LiveInc that helps students address this issue by giving them greater access to improved reading scores, reading skills. And it does this by reformatting the text to optimize the way the eyes and the brain work together while reading. So before I actually show the LiveInc technology and how this works, first I'm going to show a research study that will help you understand why this is so vital to our country. So as it turns out, ACT reading scores are a very valid predictor of college success. And when a student receives a score of 21 or greater in their reading score, it's shown that there's the likelihood or the possibility that the student is going to have a 75% chance of getting a C or better in a college social science course and a 50% chance of getting a B or better. So this is a predictor of college success. However, among the college bound, only 46% of the students attain this score. So that actually jives with the data that only about half the students actually complete college. So what we did was we created a controlled study funded by the U.S. Department of Education. I'm going to go back to this slide for a second. So this slide is showing that only 46% of those tested actually get a score of 21 or greater on the reading test. This would be our control group. So these are the students that read text in standard block format, text on a screen, and they were actually given the option to also have a printed book. So they were reading their history lessons in the standard text format, but they were using regularly formatted ebooks. So then in the other randomized group, the test group, they used the LiveInc technology. And what we found was at the end of the year when they took these reading tests, at the end of their junior year, we found that there was a 15% increase in the number of students that actually score 21% or greater. And when you add this into the total number of students that take, that actually attend college, this can be a significant number of students overall in the country. If they were to use LiveInc, they would have more access to college success. Another way to look at this is in pie charts, a little bit more graphic. So you can see that in the control group, 48% of the students, that's excluding the students who dropped out of college, received a grade of 21 or a score of 21 or greater. But then when students practiced reading in LiveInc before the test, you found that 63% of these students actually scored 21 or greater. So you're probably wondering at this point, what is this magical technology that optimizes how the eyes and the brain work? Basically, in our Connect learning management system, we have an embedded, standard formatted in block text ebook. But students also have the option to click on the left-hand side this link that's called Read in LiveInc, and we actually explain to them the value proposition of this. And when they do so, they're actually going to see the text formatted in a very, very different and important way. So how does LiveInc work? First of all, LiveInc breaks the lines into meaningful phrases. Second of all, there are shorter segments that fit the visual eye span. So basically, the eye span will take in 2 to 3 words at a time, but when you're reading block text, it's constantly regressing back, trying to gain meaning from the material. And then finally, there are indentations. These guide the eye movements to show the relationships between phrases. So what we've done at McGraw-Hill is we've incorporated this technology in a pilot for developmental reading books, for history books, and for psychology books. This is an example of a history book. And when you click on the Read in LiveInc link, you're going to see this page formatted as so. And the panels, you would flip through the panels, and as you flip through the panels, the block text will follow along with you. What we see is the following results. Reading in LiveInc leads to 25% greater comprehension and retention, 20% faster reading, and very importantly for those of us that are publishing ebooks, LiveInc format leads to 75% less eye strain and fatigue compared to other screen-based reading. So finally, in summary, McGraw-Hill Connect with LiveInc is a tool that adapts and individualizes each student's reading experience. It will increase reading speed and comprehension and ultimately retention when returning back to block text. So this is a very important feature because what LiveInc does is there's we call it the transference effect. So these students clearly are reading and practicing in LiveInc, but when they move back to block test, for example, on the ACT test, there's going to be a transference of that ability and their scores will increase, including higher scores on all the exams across all disciplines that we've tested so far. So not just the ACT test. And finally, the reduction of eye strain when reading on a screen impacts a lot of us in this room. So it's a very, very interesting technology that's addressing one of the most important issues for this country today, and that is that we are really, really decreasing in our rank of college completion. And in an increasingly knowledge economy-based world, this has a lot of significance in terms of America having a leadership position in the world economy in the future. So,
great. If you have questions, would you mind just walking for a call, just walking up to the microphone so everybody can hear you? We have a few minutes for questions.
Hi, Bob. Could you relay my question? It saves me walking
over there.
Sure. Have you tried it on STEM subjects?
We have not tried it on STEM subjects yet, simply because in STEM, you're going to have a lot of the material that's presented in STEM, be it mathematics or be it science. The art that's involved in STEM topics is often a large percentage of the material that's presented in a STEM textbook. So as a result, we're currently testing in courses that require sustained reading of block text, where the art that's involved is less significant in terms of the instruction. In mathematics, for example, the format of the mathematical equations in the text takes a large percentage of the textbook space, and that formatting obviously can't be changed.
Are you using EPUB or EPUB 3, or can you feed EPUB content into this presentation format in order to gain these benefits?
Currently, we're actually using an import tool for the TextFlow ebook that we created, which is an XML transformation. However, we certainly could create a transformation that would allow you to do that import text from an EPUB format. Right, Randy? I'm just double checking with. Yes.
All right. So, are there humans that are deciding like where what gets indented and how it gets broken out? Is there an engine that does that?
There's an engine that does that. So that's a very, very important point, because in terms of it's actually analyzing the words on the page syntactically. So it can actually analyze the material, create the line breaks at meaningful breaks, and create these indentations and shorter lines.
Are you thinking about sometime in the future soon creating an API so publishers can use that for their own content, or is this going to be only for McGraw-Hill?
No, it's definitely not only for McGraw-Hill. We really want this technology to be as widely used as possible. And the LiveInc folks are talking with other companies and other industries, for example, in the trade community and also in the ebook community on e-readers. It makes perfect sense to have the shorter lines segments and the meaningful phrases in those formats. So we're their higher education partner right now, but there are a whole lot of other markets that they could. There's somebody standing at the mic.
Hi. You mentioned that the transference effect, which I thought was quite interesting. You're saying that, if I'm understanding this correctly, that students would actually show increased comprehension and then after reading with LiveInc on standard text.
Exactly. When they move, it's fascinating, when they move back to block text, their brain in some way and their eyes have been trained to almost do this by itself when they move back to block text. So when they take the test, clearly they don't have LiveInc to rely on.
I'm saying, have you looked at that then as a reading strategy in and of itself? That's kind of my question, is then maybe then there's an idea that reading with this format would actually be something that would be helpful, regardless, not directly related to the subject content. In other words, an actual educational program. So I was wondering if you looked at that.
Absolutely. We're looking at in the K-12 space as well, in the school space. So it would be a part of the actual reading instruction as they move through the material. There's one more guy at the microphone. And then...
In your experience, what are some of the other, I guess, maybe sociopolitical factors involved with graduation rates and college completion? And do you think that there are some that are going to help you carry out your goal in improving these, or are there some that may stand in the way?
Definitely, probably the number one other factor has to do with social concerns. What's going on in the home for a student who's a returning student who may have children and working, and they're trying to juggle all those things. So this is a part of an overall adaptive system that's actually addressing that issue, because they can work on their own time when they do this material. And they can also, there's a time management feature that we've incorporated into the project that will actually help them manage their time around these social issues. That's the other really important problem.
It would be really cool to put this into the reading open source web kit that the IPF is running. This would just be way cool.
One more question.
I'm very impressed with the statistics that you published. Just out of curiosity, was your test group's ballpark figure, hundreds, thousands? I mean, what type of...
I'll let Randy address that, who ran the study.
It's been tested in multiple sites. Yeah.
The Department of Education studies were in Colorado, involving hundreds of students. We also have other studies ongoing.
Okay.
Other sites across the country, across different grade levels, including one that will be wrapped up this summer involving several thousand students in Los Angeles.
Very impressive.
Thank you, everyone.
So I have one question for you, since I get to be up here. And maybe relates a little bit, George, with your question. I mean, is there, do you know if the Living folks are working on a standard? I mean, is there a way to leverage the EPUB 3 format to standardize the approach?
I think there definitely could be, because they could write a transformation, an XML transformation, that would actually work with the various standard formats.
Right.
Right now, we're just doing it with a McGraw-Hill Textful ebook, and I think it has something to do with those standards. I mean, it's a relatively standard XML format, so we've experienced doing that, and there's no reason why we couldn't write a similar transformation for EPUB.
Great. Good morning, everybody. I'm Kent Freeman, as Andrew mentioned, Chief Operating Officer from VitalSource Technologies. I want to switch a little bit directions and really talk about we're a leading e-text provider. Talk a little bit about how we're looking forward to sort of leveraging the great advancements that we think EPUB 3 bring to us. Segue there for me is just that the standardization will allow so much more of these kind of benefits, right? The more that the publishers can publish to a standard, we can take these sort of plugins and additional tool sets to really further important points like accessibility and so forth. So I think the standardization has the potential to drive so much. And, you know, along the way, it reads like a little bit of excitement around all that's coming to us with EPUB 3. I was sitting in one of the earlier presentations with a little bit of sort of this notion that maybe it's really going to take a long time for publishers to get there with EPUB 3. We certainly intend to do our part in if you're publishers in pulling you along. We know from our experience working with institutions, large institutions, that they're excited about the potential that EPUB 3 brings, and that they will hopefully be pulling through as much content in that format as we can. So with that said, a little bit just quick background on VitalSource, who we are. We really sort of fundamentally have two major components to our business. We're an e-textbook platform, large-scale platform for delivery of e-textbook content out from publishers to institutions. Our platform that we deliver the e-text on is Bookshelf. It's a single platform, but it runs across a number of different operating environments that I'll talk about. We're very much standards focused with EPUB 3 support now, early on EPUB 3 support and LTI support from the IMS if you're sort of into the learning management space. In addition, we have a large group that is focused on helping publishers enhance their content to take advantage of an increasingly interactive content delivery model. So we can do things like create interactive learning objects that fit in with the EPUB standard, videos, animations, so forth through that group. Just some metrics. We've got over 2 million users registered now. Last year we delivered over 5 million textbooks. We have an inventory of 90,000 titles from an array of publishers and native support already for 17 languages. We're basically in use around the world. We drive e-text delivery, if you will, to some of the largest institutions in the country and around the world. Some of the names here you can see. We're trusted as well to secure the content and deliver the content from some of the largest publishers. So now I want to sort of quickly move into how's EPUB relevant for us in Bookshelf? And importantly, we want to say we're ready. So if you're a publisher, I think many of you are on the publishing side, we're ready to accept your content in EPUB or EPUB 3 format. We're working today to deliver in 6 different clients, which I'll talk a little bit further about. And we're ready to enhance that content with full interactivity and interactive learning objects. It's important, I think, to note, we were talking about the XML requirement earlier, Paul, in your talk. We've been delivering reflowable content since 2000 to institutions. So that's really been a foundation for how we've built our platforms. It's enabled us to support the different form factors of devices. It's enabled us to support a lot of the accessibility features that we've provided. We're so excited, though, about the ability to sort of start taking advantage of the open web standards with EPUB3's inclusion, you know, support for HTML5. And we see it as an accelerator for so much, an accelerator for interactivity. Why? It's not so much that it enables things that haven't been enabled before, but the standardization allows the should allow the publishers to more cost-effectively drive the interactivity. So on the client side, six clients, Android and the Kindle Fire. So those are slightly different forks of Android. Most of you probably know that the Fire is based on Android. The iOS environment, iPhone, iPad, so forth, Windows and Mac, and virtually any of the modern browsers. So we've got a lot of different formats or delivery paths that we're bringing EPUB into. We're receiving files now. We've got some publishers that are—it's early, right? I mean, publishers are just now beginning to send files in, experiment, see what they can do with the content. But we're beginning to see receive those files. We're ready to receive them. We're not only ready through VitalSource; we're ready through our leading, you know, digital repository and kind of syndication platform called CoreSource. So both the platforms are ready to receive and manage EPUB files. And importantly, allowing us to reach students the way that you want to and reach them now. So now we're driving. We've had 90,000 titles in our platform. And for years, since Ingram acquired VitalSource 6 years ago, prior to that, we were able to deliver interactive content. And I'll tell you, unfortunately, there's not enough content out there that's truly interactive yet. And so we're very excited to be able to exploit kind of the HTML5 capabilities with EPUB to add interactive content. We acquired another company last year to bring in and help drive more interactivity. And it's all built around the EPUB standards in terms of our ability to publish and leverage the rich layout options that HTML5 supports to let the publishers control the way that the page is presented to our users. You know, traditionally, you were limited in that. You were sort of dependent on our rendering of your content. But with HTML5, the publisher gets much more control over that capability. Allows standardization for tagging and so forth necessary to support accessibility. So often people look to the platform provider as the solution for accessibility. And we are working hard to continue to do our part in that regard. But it's not just the application. The content has got to be, you know, provided in a way to really facilitate the accessibility. And so, the standardization, we think, is key to that. And we really see, you know, a significant growth in interactive learning objects and the ability to have granular access to the content, to make assessments and dynamically, you know, move to different parts of the content, adaptive learning, if you will. Let's speed up a little bit. All right, so here's an example. If you're familiar with the Bookshelf platform, here's just an example of a screen that's completely different than anything we've rendered before, which is where showing that just the publisher's content really sets determines how the page layout is really going to behave and look. It's very easy to bring in video and interact with things like Twitter and YouTube and to bring other kinds of capabilities into the content. So the content format becomes so much more about how the publisher wants to have the page rendered than about how our page is actually sort of responding to the content. We're doing a lot with interactive learning objects. I think we have basically 16 kinds of models, templates that publishers can leverage to very cost-effectively create interactive learning objects. This can be anything from multiple choice questions, true-false questions, drag and drop exercise like you see here, animation activities, various things. And again, a very cost-effective approach to allow you as publishers to include this interactivity in your applications. I know that, again, if you're on the publisher side, there's all this great capability that you see with HTML5, and the question is where do you spend your money? How do you, you know, where do you devote your resources to doing this? We're doing what we can to make it as cost-effective for you as possible. More exercises. So here's an example of an interactive assessment with drag and drop. Got four of the points right, two wrong. And here's a sort of, importantly, a standards approach to embedding that interactivity into the e-text and then assessing. So we saw it got, what, a 66, four out of six. Taking those outcome results and using another set of standards, the LTI standards, and reporting those back to the grade book or the LMS or the wherever that sort of information needs to go. All being done through sort of an EPUB container, if you will, within the bookshelf application. So again, just, you know, George is here in the room. If you don't know, George Kircher, you know, has really led the effort on EPUB 3. And, you know, with the IDPF, we certainly thank the organization and all the folks that have contributed the hard work to getting there. We are very much behind the standards, very much behind EPUB 3, any other standards that we can participate in. And we do kind of plan to drive you as publishers towards implementation of these formats. Glad to answer questions. I don't. Here, so.
Hi, I was just curious if the new EPUB 3 standard on Vital Source will support MathML.
Yes.
Like BBK did.
Yes.
And also if you'll have an image fallback.
On image fallback on the math? On the math?
Well, I guess maybe we don't need that. If it's
So we're supporting MathML within EPUB.
And then also alt.
If you go too deep here, I'm going to give you somebody else's email address.
Will you support alternative text for images and tables?
Yes.
And final?
Fundamental to our accessibility piece.
Okay, great. And also video.
Do we support video? Yes.
And is it saleable right now? Could we send an EPUB 3 to Vital Source?
You can send an EPUB 3 to us right now. Today, the first platform that launched with EPUB is our online platform. It's EPUB ready. Through the summer, we're taking all of our other platforms. So I mentioned we have six clients.
Okay.
So we have all the others in the development path being QA'd right now to come out. And through the summer, they will all be EPUB ready. So if you can get us the content, then, you know, for this fall, we're EPUB ready across our clients.
So online right now, but for the bookshelf, likely in the fall.
Right. We won't actually, on a pilot basis, we would do something with you via online, but what we want to do is bring all our clients up and then turn the content on. But if you want to pilot or work with us on it, then online is ready today.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, you're fine.
Exactly. Question for both of you, for Vital Source and
McGraw
Live Inc.
Are you also aligning with QTI and particularly APIP, even though I know it's not an official standard yet?
QTI, yes. I'm not.
APIP is an accessibility
standard.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
Heard your CTO.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
And you're fully behind both.
I owe you. Thank you. All right. Great. I was afraid somebody was going to dive down into the tags or something, and I was going to be in trouble. So, but thank you, Ken. Other questions? We've got time. You guys understand? So, Live Inc. Is anybody here from Live Inc.?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Separate company, right?
Yes.
Available to any publisher to use. Is that accurate? I mean, is that? No? Yeah. Okay.
Wherever words are read, we're the sentence comprehension company.
Okay.
So if your content has English sentences and you'd like your readers to comprehend them more effectively and with greater comfort, we'd be glad to work out ways to publish your content.
Is there any consideration of using it for presentation as well, or is it online only?
I'm sorry?
Is there any consideration with the publishers that you're working with to use the Live Inc. technology to generate the print versions as well as online?
It does occupy a bit more space, about twice as much. So the paper costs would probably double.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on how it individualizes each student's reading experience?
Yeah.
You can come up here.
That's a great question. I actually had that same question for Randy at some point.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, I think you're better at describing the scaffolding than I am.
The beauty of the natural language parsing engine is that however long the sentences may be, as you apply rules of natural language syntax analysis, it's a recursive process, and you can continue to extract more and more complex sentence structure. So the scalability pertains to whatever level of difficulty that student's reading assignment may be. The live ink cascading pattern will be appropriate in terms of the grammar of that sentence. And as the student advances through a more difficult material, then the parsing engine will analyze a more complex sentence structure and support the student in that level as well.
It's not responding to an individual student's reading, but rather to the structure of the...
Well, and actually, if I might also add, no, not directly, but what we've done is we're embedding this technology into an adaptive platform. So the student is moving through the material at their own pace and to build their own skills, and therefore it's feeding them live ink content that's appropriate to where they are in the path.
Thank you.
Okay, what are the limits, though? What are the limits to the engine? I mean, sort of, can it handle quantum mechanics, for example? History is easy, quantum mechanics.
It depends on how well the writer used English syntax. It's all about nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs, embedded relative clauses. So if you talk about quantum mechanics, then that's an adjective and a plural noun, and it'll analyze that in context.
Have you looked at supplementing the visual presentation with auditory, either text-to-speech or human narration? And EPUB 3 has many overlays that support that text audio synchronization.
Thank you for that question. There's an opportunity combine and enhance a voice engine with the additional tags that are embedded in a live ink file structure, and to give it a more natural phrasing pattern, and even to modulate from phrase to phrase prosodic arc of each phrase that would be appropriate for its part of speech, and to make it sound more natural. And we welcome anyone who would want to take a look at that with us.
I apologize for a really super geeky question, but I'm really interested in what the underlying markup is. There's implication it might be XHTML markup, but I know if it's natural language processing, it could be TEI. I mean, can you say what the markup is that's breaking the lines and putting the indents in and things?
The real markup is proprietary, and then it's distilled down into something that's more translatable into a browser.
Then you do render it in HTML.
It ultimately does get rendered, right.
I think we have time for one more question. Have you done
any studies on how it improves reading for ESL students?
For ESL actually, actually, it's very powerful for ESL. Studies have shown before our work that the degree of difficulty that a non-native language person has in reading English correlates directly with the extent of the difference in the grammatical rules of the two languages. And so as students try to get into English, we're basically serving up English grammar to them on a silver platter. Our studies have shown that through middle and high school, the ESL readers will close more than half the gap between their reading ability and the native English students who had been in the control group. So it's a real gap closer in terms of learning to read English. And actually, the students say that if they feel that they've improved their speaking English as well.
Good. Well, that's all we really have time for. I want to give a round of applause.